Progressive Radio Network, the station for critical issues from critical minds.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on the road, filming, back in the city shortly with a brand new feature documentary on an important social issue. Today on our program, the latest on health and healing. Then we're going to have no guests because I wanted more time for commentary, my own commentary on trying to understand the religion of libertarianism. Plus, why is it that the left is not focusing upon important human, global, environmental, and social issues? They've narrowed it down to just attacking Trump, even defending the idea that the gang, the most deadly gang in the world, MS-13, should be treated with the same respect as any other person. I'll deal with that. Also, the latest on the truth of the failed flu vaccine with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. So we have a lot to do today, and we're all going to start on the topic of health. I have people who work night shifts who contact me. They've heard the program. And they say, I know that you're very concerned. You believe that by working a night shift, that it's shortening lifespan. Well, it depends upon the work you do. It depends upon your stress level. It depends upon the environment you're working in. It depends upon your eating habits. All these will mitigate or exacerbate whether you're aging prematurely. But on average, if you did everything right, but you still worked at night, you can knock anywhere from 5 to 7 years off your lifespan. But a lot of people are police officers, medics, people working in emergency rooms. It's very high stress because a lot of crimes occur at night, a lot of emergencies at night. So the adrenaline is pumping. Cortisol is elevated. That's danger to your biochemistry. Other people work in television, in broadcasting. Just sitting at a console, a normal, not a real big one, just a normal home or professional console, you're getting electromagnetic pulses coming in to your body. Over time, that also shortens your life, damages your DNA, speeds up your telomeres. All it's bad. And yet we have to understand how bad it is before we're going to be in a position of deciding, is it worth making the change? I'm always suggesting that whatever could be automated and done at night should be so that a human can sleep. Now, let's say that you're working in front of screens. Maybe you're working over at HBO or NBC, CBS, NBC, any of these studios, and you're in front of monitors. Every one of those monitors is throwing out an electromagnetic pulse. But in order to get that signal in, there's a gigantic, generally on the roof or in a lot beside the studio, there's a gigantic receiver. That antenna, that dish, is magnifying the amount of electromagnetic pulses 1,000 times what you would normally be exposed to. That's when you really speed up the shortening of your life cycle by as much as 10 years. Just that. This is the latest in the University of Colorado. Eating at night, sleeping by day, swiftly alters key blood proteins. So staying awake all night and sleeping all day for just a few days can disrupt levels and time of day patterns of more than 100 proteins in the blood, including those that influence blood sugar, energy metabolism, and immune function. That's according to this new University of Colorado Boulder research published in the journal PNAS. Quote, this tells us that when you experience things like jet lag or a couple of nights of shift work, we very rapidly alter our normal physiology in a way that, if sustained, can be detrimental to our health. end quote. And that is the director of the Sleep and Chronobiology Laboratory and a professor in the Department of Integrative Physiology. So it doesn't take long to interrupt the plasma proteome, and when that happens, you end up aging prematurely. So just remember, you pay a price for the nightlife if it's sustained. Something good we can do, especially to slow the lung function decline due to aging, and this is from Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, and it's about previous research that showed that the plant-producing chemicals known as flavonoids have beneficial antioxidant anti-inflammatory properties. Now, within those flavonoids, there's one called antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S. That's a type of flavonoid that they're investigating, and they've detected in lung tissue shortly after being ingested, and especially for COPD, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. The plant chemical appears to reduce mucus, that's good, reduce inflammatory secretions like cytokines, that's extremely good. So the more of the flavonoids you put into your system, the better it is for your lungs. You can literally slow down the disease process. And the study found individuals in the highest compared to the lowest quartile of anthocyanin intake. They had a slower rate of annual decline than those in the lowest, and they did better. So in simple lay language, maybe you have someone in your family that smoked, or maybe worked in an environment where they breathed in asbestos or other toxic chemicals. Maybe they were a painter, a glazier, maybe a plumber. All that puts you directly in contact with volatile chemicals, and the lungs are dealing with those. So, here's my suggestion that could help. 2,000 milligrams of quercetin three times a day. 2,000 milligrams of buffered vitamin C at the same time, three times a day. 200 milligrams, well, between 100 to 200 milligrams of resveratrol three times a day. All of that, along with vitamin E, 400 units from mixed natural tocopherols and tocotrienols, 400 units twice a day. That should make an enormous difference in those of you who have COPD. Because if you don't deal with it, it's almost always terminal. And by the way, in the very near future, as a part of our series on challenging the so-called skeptics, the so-called guardians of the gates of ultra-orthodoxy in science, the reductionists, the Newtonians, the people that want to reduce all life, all reality to just some molecules, some mathematical equation. They're generally atheist, which is their right. They do not believe in such things as energy transfer. They don't believe that organic is better than MGO. They don't believe in supplements. They don't believe in plant-based. They don't believe in chiropractic and homeopathy and energy medicine, mind-body medicine. Don't believe in any of that. And they control Wikipedia. So, thus far, in the last 10 days, Richard Gale and I have produced four original, in-depth investigative reports showing just the opposite. The difference is that as a program of record, what do I mean? I mean that people rely upon the information that they hear on this program because they know it is quality science-based. We go to great lengths in our scholarship to recite information where we always, no exceptions, provide you with the original source material, the peer-reviewed journal where it's published, and what the science shows. I do that because I want people to have confidence that the information we're sharing, they can rely upon. Because there's a real challenge out there. And it's been there my entire career. And it was there in the careers of Carlton Fredericks and Gaylord Houzard and Adele Davis before me. They were attacked no matter what they said. I and others have been also attacked and ridiculed, including on Wikipedia. But now we're showing who's behind this. Oh, and by the way, since I started this series on Wikipedia, this so-called Sacred Cow Encyclopedia, every single day another expose is coming out. Every single day. And they're sending stuff over to us. For example, today, from Caitlin Johnstone via media.com, quote, "Is Wikipedia an establishment psyop?" And then it goes into explaining what it means and who are these people acting as editors and how many of them could be working for the CIA or other organizations, including the pharmaceutical industry, to attack people who have different points of opinion, different views. Craig Murray, the former ambassador, also attacked on Wikipedia, fighting back. So now we have many people from anti-war movement people, environmentalists, not just health and nutrition. So here's what's coming. More than 75 articles this year is coming at Wikipedia, showing the truth, all documented, all vetted for accuracy. So we begin the challenge. How can you be a part of this? Simple. Go to prn.fm. You'll see the articles we've already published. Share them far and wide. Is it working? Well, as of yesterday morning, 107,000 people have downloaded those articles. That's a lot of people, by the way. And how many did they share it with? I have no way of knowing. I do know that about 75 major sites, Global Research, The Natural Blaze, Green Med Info, are also carrying these. So they each reached hundreds of thousands of people. So millions upon millions of people are now looking at something with a different perspective. So we're trying to show that we're not going to apologize for being right. We're not going to apologize for sharing positive information. We're just going to keep sharing it. But at the same time, we're asking you to question trusting whatever you read on Wikipedia, because we've been able to show its biases. Next up, I want to talk for a few moments about a compound in citrus oil could reduce dry mouth in the head and neck cancer patients. This is from Stanford University School of Medicine. It was published in America's most prestigious scientific journal, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, in the current issue out now. And a compound found in citrus oils could help alleviate dry mouth caused by radiation therapy in head and neck cancer patients. And the compound is called D-limonene, L-I-M-O-N-E-N-E. Now, I've been talking about this probably for 30 years. And this you find in the skin of lemons, and in particular. And how I was talking about it is use it when you shave an organic lemon and you shave the skin into a salad dressing. Or, for that matter, it's great with lemongrass and the shavings of a lemon skin. You can put them into brown rice and then squirt some lemon juice into it. Most people don't think of lemon juice into a potato or lemon juice into rice. It makes a completely different taste and mouthfeel to the rice. But now we know that it protects the cells that produce saliva, and especially those people impacted by radiation, which is millions of people. So that's important. Something new, something inexpensive, something right in front of us, and now proven to make a difference. By the way, radiation kills your salivary glands, and that's bad in the cells in those glands. So I don't tell people to take radiation or chemotherapy or not. That's their choice. Just know the consequences. Also from New York University School of Medicine, the Mediterranean diet can blunt air pollution's ill health effects. That's correct. eating a Mediterranean diet can protect people from some of the harm of long-term exposure to air pollution and reduce their risk of dying from heart attacks and strokes and other causes of death. And that was presented at an international conference. Quote, previous studies have shown that dietary changes, particularly in the addition of antioxidants, can blunt the adverse effects of exposure of high levels of air pollution over short time periods. And what we did not know was whether diet can influence the association between long-term air pollution exposure and health effects. Well, they found out, yes, it does. So a diet rich in antioxidants, which is the Mediterranean or plant-based diet, where you're loading up with fruits and vegetables and whole grains and legumes and olives and olive oils, can make an enormous difference. Just remember, the antioxidants, which I believe you should have six times a day, spread out, are molecules that disarm oxidized and highly reactive molecules, or what we call free radicals, that are known to cause cell and tissue damage. So the more pollution you have in the air, the more likely you are to die a quicker death. And it impacts cardiovascular disease, and precipitates more heart attacks. So that's important. And finally, from Oregon University School of Medicine, pregnant smokers may reduce harm done to the baby's lungs by taking vitamin C. And in a previous study, the researchers reported the daily supplements of vitamin C in pregnant women who could not quit smoking improved their newborn's pulmonary function as measured by passive respiratory compliance and the time to peak tidal air flow and the air time. This was a one-year study, so not everyone who smokes can quit, but in this study they used only 500 milligrams a day of vitamin C. They used that or a placebo, and they found that the vitamin C made an enormous difference. I believe that's too low. I would go to about 2,000 milligrams, spread out 500 milligrams four times a day. But it's good that they did that. One last thing. This is from UCLA. They're talking about Americans are becoming more socially isolated. And for young people, 20,000 were interviewed for this. Quote, people around me but not with me. No one really knows me well. That was the common theme, that we are lacking empathy, we are lacking quality relationships, but have these social relationships, and that leads to loneliness. So it's something that we should think about. By the way, it's truer for younger people, less true for older people. Older people prefer to have quality personal relationships one-on-one. I'll give one more. Harvard University did a study published in the Annals of Neurology. And can you name the fruit that boosts your brain power and heart health? What do you think it is? A single fruit. Now, we know from this audience at least, and I'm sure that you are an exception because of listening every day or whenever you can, that you should eat more fruits and vegetables to be healthy. But many people assume that if fruit is super sweet and tasty, it can't possibly be all that good for you. So they don't think about which fruits are the best for you. And we're not actually a big fruit-eating nation. We eat a banana, we eat an apple, but we don't eat a lot, and we don't eat a lot of varieties. So which single fruit is best for your brain? Which single fruit has the most anthocyanins, which are linked to keeping your brain sharp? And we know that the anthocyanins reduce oxidative stress and inflammation in the brain and improve memory. So this is a Harvard study published in the journal Neurology. Let's see if someone can answer that. You get one try at it. Call our talkback number, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. The single best fruit for your brain, according to Harvard and published in Journal of Neurology. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
There's plenty of light. Oh, yeah. A new day is dawning, sunny and bright. Oh, but yeah. After I've been crying all night, the sun is cold and the new day seems old. Since I lost my baby.
Since I lost my baby.
Oh, since I lost my baby.
Oh, yeah. Let's see if we've got any calls. I'll know in a moment here. If you can figure it out, please call me. In the interim, I want to do a few short commentaries, and then you'll have an opportunity to call in and share your points of view. This is about the war on drugs, which is far deadlier than most people realize. And this is from Brian Satie of Counterpunch. My audience knows that I'm opposed to the war on drugs. It is like the prohibition against alcohol. It led to organized crime, La Cosa Nostra, Meyer Lansky, and his Group of Seven. And just imagine how many people have died. Well, we know in the last 10 years in Mexico, it's with missing and dead, over 200,000. But think how it's impacted people's lives. In fact, when I was in Sedona, Arizona, and I was just having a conversation with someone in Sedona last night, and I asked him, do you remember the lecture I did not long ago, an impromptu lecture? They saw me in a restaurant having some juices. I'd just broken a one-week fast, and I was doing my annual spiritual retreat, and I did this lecture. It was packed. They just called people up, I guess. Small community. About 13,000 people. You can drive through it in under 5 minutes. In any case, I asked him a question. I said, a lot of people in here do marijuana. All the hands went up. Everyone did, they, at least all the hands in that room, probably 300 people. And I said, how do you feel about the legalization of pot? Oh, yeah, they're for it. I don't see any petitions. I don't see any grassroots effort. I don't see any movement to cause it to become legal, which it should be. But did you know that the town right below Sedona has more people involved in organized crime out of Mexico? So for you to have your marijuana, people are being beheaded, burned alive, and killed in Mexico. So if you knew that for you to have your marijuana, someone would have to die, would you still want your marijuana? That turned the room into an ice cube, I want to tell you. And I wouldn't go on until they answered me. I said, because there's a social responsibility for the choices we make, unless we're completely self-absorbed and we don't care. In any case, I think it's important that we not have a war on drugs, that we legalize all drugs, but I want to go two steps further. I want to put a clinic in every neighborhood with humanistic psychologists, social workers, to help people who have been on drugs to make a transition, cleaning up. And I have, by the way, for anyone in this audience, anywhere in the world, because we're heard worldwide, I used to head drug addiction at Trafalgar Hospital through the Institute of Applied Biology. I've counseled and helped thousands of drug addicts from every kind of drug. And I had a very high success rate, but I didn't use methadone, which was what we were told we had to use. I just didn't do it. Instead, I used natural therapies. But we do have natural, non-toxic therapies to get people off cocaine, methamphetamine, you name it, we can detoxify them. In fact, there's a person listening right now who for, what, about 14 years had a son that was on every drug imaginable and completely burned out, a shell of a human being, completely psychotic. In under 2 weeks, normalized him. He is now a completely healthy, happy, successful person, and his father's very proud of him now and working with him. So In any case, that's a separate issue, but I believe that we should have places where people can go and stay until they can get on their feet and reenter society and go back to their homes in a different way than when they crashed and burned. Also, I believe that every single prison record should be expunged so that a person has nothing on their record that would limit them from being able to participate in society and not be prejudiced against. These are my own personal feelings. Anyhow, oh my goodness, we have a lot of people. Real quick, I'm going to give you one word that you can say. We're going to run right through this real quick because the whole board is lit up. From Connecticut, Francis, what is the brain food, Francis?
Hi. I would say the dark purple grapes.
Good, thank you. Paula from Florida, what is the brain food?
Blueberries.
What berry? I didn't hear you. Paula, say it again.
Blueberries.
Oh, you said blueberries. Sasha from California. Sasha, what is the berry or what is the food?
I have to say blueberries.
Blueberry. Okay. Thank you, Sasha.
Thank you.
Joan from New Jersey, what is the food?
Blueberries.
Blueberries. Janet from California. Janet, what is the food?
Blueberries.
Well, all of you who said blueberries, you were correct. That is why all the people I counsel, I have them eat a minimum of a pint, as much as a quart, and I won't even tell you how much I eat each day. I mean, it's a lot. And for people with cancer, dementia, Alzheimer's, MS, well, it's off the chart how much blueberries. But I get other berries in there, too. Omniberries, gooseberries, goji berries, mulberries, they're all good for you. But the blueberry is super. Get your blueberries every day. And out of season, you can go and buy them in a big 5-pound bag for $10. And they're organic. So you're all right. Thank you all very much for calling in. Now, to the issue on the war on drugs. While accepting the Nobel Peace Prize in 2016, Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos said, quote, "The manner in which this war against drugs is being waged is equally or perhaps even more harmful than all the wars the world is fighting today combined. The death toll from the drug war is much less than the actual war front throughout the world. However, his sentiment, I believe, is appropriate because a significant percentage of the world's violence could be prevented just with a flick of a pen by ending the war on drugs. Now imagine if we could essentially eliminate the black market for drug trafficking in Chicago, by the way, which has the highest number of gang members and homicides. Last night I was looking on my statistics for worst violent places in America, and it's estimated that up to 80% of the city's murders are gang-related, and one of the main causes of this violence is connecting to who controls the turf for drug sales. Gang violence isn't as rampant throughout the United States, but the National Gang Information Center estimates that 13%, that's a lot, of the murders in the United States are gang-related. And there was also Narco News that conducted a study showing that 1,100 drug war-related murders occur each year in the United States. Now, keep in mind, that figure is fairly conservative due to the lack of full transparency with crime statistics. So the U.S. represents the largest market in the world for illegal drugs. Currently, there's a well-documented opiate crisis, but the U.S. also consumes more cocaine than all of Europe by a wide margin. All told, the U.S. illegal drug black market is $100 billion profit industry. And although there's a serious black market violence problem in the United States, it pales in comparison to the countries that are sources of transshipment points of illegal drugs. For example, there are over 29,000 murders in Mexico just last year. That's 50% being drug-related. That's not factoring in 30,000 who went missing and are presumed dead last year. And, oh, by the way, remember when I told you, be careful, don't even go to Cancun? Well, 2 weeks ago, four people were killed in Cancun while vacationing, and two cyclists were just out on the road cycling. They were also killed, shot in the head. So unless you have an absolute reason that you must go to Mexico, don't. And I can't explain why at this time. I don't have the time, but the gangs will know when you're coming. They'll know all about you. You have to give your passport information in advance. They have people working in every one of the gangs, checking every single person's background, who your brothers, sisters, mother, fathers are, if they have money. If you're just a student but your father's a physician, you can bet that you're going to be up on their radar for kidnapping. You pull into, you go to the airport, you check out, you go outside, you want to get into a cab, take into your hotel. They could control every single cab, and that cab driver could have your name, your face, and you wouldn't know it. They don't take you to the hotel. They take you to a safe house, and then you start being interrogated. Then they contact your parents and say, here's what you do. You transfer this money to this account, or we're going to video showing you how we take off your son's ears, then fingers, and generally they get it. It's all done quietly, so not the place to go because you have no idea how corrupt the entire country is. The cartels conduct warfare in a brazen manner that's essentially indistinguishable from terrorist groups. Well, they are terrorist groups. They'll hang rival gang members from bridges or publicly putting bounties on corrupt government officials. Narco money has enabled these organized crime groups to operate with impunity. And the latest example of this corruption involves the leader of the Los Rojo gang financing the campaigns of 11 mayoral candidates openly in exchange for political protection. Now you think, well, that's rather absurd. Well, bear in mind, this isn't a matter of simple greed. If these officials don't take the bribes, they'll be killed. How many were killed? 100 mayors have been murdered in Mexico. All in all, narco money has corrupted every segment of the government necessary to protect their organizations, the police, the prisons, judicial, the politics. Yeah, it's all corrupt in Mexico. In fact, as a matter of fact, Los Zetas have been corrupted the highest levels of government in neighboring countries. The ex-vice president and former minister Venturio have been arrested for accepting bribes of $1.5 million. And their cartel is responsible for the worst massacre in Guatemala since the Civil War. In fact, their members beheaded 27 innocent farm workers in search of the ranch owner whom the cartel suspected of stealing a drug shipment. In large part due to the war on drugs, the four countries immediately south of Mexico, that would be Belize and Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, are listed within the top six highest murder rates in the world. And furthermore, 9 out of the top 10 are in Latin America or the Caribbean. And likewise, 43 of the 50 cities with the highest murder rates are in Latin America or the Caribbean. And 4 of the remaining cities are in the United States. Baltimore, number 1, Detroit, New Orleans, and St. Louis. And obviously, there are a variety of factors that contribute to violence, notably extreme poverty. And one city on the list, San Juan, Puerto Rico, has had fairly low crime in recent years, but Hurricane Maria brought about much instability to the island. Otherwise, it's clear that the war on drugs is one of the leading factors in the high violence. And Mexico had 12 cities in top 50, which was the second highest number behind Brazil. So it's just important to note, Brazil isn't a major source of drug production. However, it has historically been the second largest consumer market for cocaine, and it's the leading transshipment point of illegal drugs into Europe, Africa, and Asia. That's evident in the fact that 17 Brazilian cities are in the top 50 global homicide rates, and 14 of those cities are located along the Pacific coast. So this violence isn't a result of this soft-on-crime approach. The Brazilian government takes the term war on drugs literally, and like Mexico, the military, along with the police, conduct law enforcement operations, and the results are predictable. The Brazilian police kill an average of 6 people every 24 hours. And remarkably, the police are responsible for roughly 1 out of 5 murders in Rio de Janeiro, with very few held accountable. and the police, in many cases, are acting in self-defense. However, the Brazilian government has essentially provided the police with impunity for extrajudicial murder, and they operate in a brazen manner. So we're involved today in narco-terrorism in the United States, around the world, and yet there we are saying, on the one hand, that we're concerned about violence and gun violence, yet remember, criminals never have a problem getting a gun. And then they use it. And the Gang 13 from El Salvador, one of its initiation rites is stabbing people to death. So these are not nice guys. They don't act like human beings. And I posted a picture. I normally would not, but I wanted to show you how violent they are. So don't look at it if you're queasy, because in this case, each member of the gang for their initiation was showing they left the knife in the victim. You got like 60 knives in this person. And you think that these people care? Out on Long Island, they killed 4 high school students with machetes, killed another person, ripped out their heart. And if we didn't have a war on drugs, then these people wouldn't be able to prosper in the black market. And those who wanted to get out of the gangs, if we had these safe halfway houses for rehabilitation to help them, then that would help those that wanted to get back into a nonviolent life to do so. We're doing none of the above. We're doing everything reactively, and we're allowing the politicians, hypocrites that they are, to say that we need a war on drugs. No, we don't. We should have been beyond that at this point. Now, I want to hear your point of view on the war on drugs. Do you believe we should keep the war on drugs or abolish it? And if so, how? 888-874-4888 is our number. And while what we will do, we will try to reloop that. And while we're doing that, let's hear from Dr. Sherry Tenpenny exposing the truth on the failed flu vaccine.
Well, first and foremost, they don't work. You know how this year they're saying that the flu vaccine, it only works 10% of the time, but you should get it anyways, right? Yeah. And so it's really important for people to know. Probably one of the most important pieces of work that I've done on the flu shot for a really long time is that I look back at the CDC data over the last 19 years, and every year they have they collate all this data. So they have 120 testing sites around the country. And if you have flu-like symptoms and you go in with a sore throat and sort of a fever and body aches, they take a nasal swab and a throat swab, and they send it to the CDC to find out if it's actually influenza, which the only thing that the influenza vaccine is supposed to keep you from getting sick is from influenza. So is this illness from influenza or one of about 20 other types of pathogens that can cause you to have the same type of symptoms? So I look back at the annualized collate of all this data that the CDC put together over the last 19 years. And on average, they test, somewhere between 400,000 and 600,000 specimens. And then they say, okay, this percentage are just influenza viruses. And when I did all the data, what it actually shows is that on average, about 15% of the illness that's out there this time of year is actually caused by influenza viruses. So you get an influenza flu shot. It's supposed to keep you from getting sick, but only keep you from getting sick from influenza. And if you get sick from influenza only 15% of the time, that means that year after year, the flu shot fails to keep you from getting sick 85% of the time.
Wow. Wow. And the other part of it is, too, they're trying to guess at these. We have all these different strains of flu. They're trying to guess in advance which ones are going to vaccinate you with. And these strains that they have, as they have set them aside, they will mutate into other things as well. So that's one of the reasons why it's not that effective, because they don't know what strains you're going to be exposed to. And so it's a shot in the dark, isn't it?
It's no even worse intended. Than that, is that they go and they pick 3 strains from that were prevalent in Southeast Asia last year, and then they have to find out whether or not those strains actually grow in eggs. And even though they may have been the ones in circulation, if they don't grow well in eggs, they have to match them up with a virus that does grow well with eggs. So they make baby viruses that aren't the ones that match the ones out in circulation anyways. So it's completely a crapshoot. And every vaccine, whether it's a flu shot or hepatitis B or hepatitis A or any of the other vaccines, every single vaccine is an experiment. It's an experiment based on how it's made, the products that it's made from. I mean, flu shots are now not only, there's two vaccines that are not made from eggs. One is called
Okay, well, you heard what she said. Now, what we should be told by the Surgeon General and the U.S. Public Health Service is that the peer-reviewed scientific literature proves that vitamin D3, vitamin C, the essential fatty acids, the omega-3 fatty acids, can build up our immune system to be able to withstand an assault from the flu or influenza, the cold. But we're never told about the natural non-toxic, just about the experimental vaccines, and they're all experimental. Now, we're going to go back to the clip on this subject because people have asked me about this, and they're a little confused about what is libertarianism, and it's a mixed bag, and I'll explain this afterwards. But I also want to mention that as of today, we are going to start a very methodical program of deconstructing the illegitimate arguments of the super supporters of orthodoxy in medicine and pharmaceuticals. And we're going to have our citizen journalists do this. And what it would be is you'll be assigned a simple theme, something that you could do easily from your own computer. You don't have to write anything, just some research. We will do it all after that. But we're taking on a whole lot of different themes right now. And it's going to be involved. Our next up is next week. Next Monday, I'll be giving them my next investigative report. And then after that, it's going to be on nutrients. They say nutrients don't work. Well, we have 500,000 studies from peer-reviewed literature showing they do work. So you can go to prn.fm. prn.fm. That's not it. I'm going to ask Jesse to send me what, if people want to be a citizen journalist and get a single nutrient assigned for them to research from peer-reviewed literature, the number that they will, the email they will come in is prnstudio@gmail.com. prnstudio@gmail.com. That's correct. prnstudio@gmail.com. Now, tonight on the Progressive Commentary Hour, I've got a humdinger. First, you're going to hear a former drone operator in one of the most terse and intense interviews you've ever heard about how America's armed forces are using drones in drone warfare as modern weaponry, and it's not a good thing. That's one. Also tonight, you'll be hearing Abby Martin interview a former Israeli Army combat soldier who served as an occupier in Palestine's Hebron City. Very interesting discussion. Two really important interviews. Join me tonight on PRN.FM on the Progressive Commentary Hour. Now let's go over and let's hear about the political philosophy of libertarianism.
Have a government-issued license to drive a car.
Hell no.
What's next? Requiring a license to make toast in your own damn toaster?
The license to drive? You know, I'd like to see some competency exhibited by people before they drive.
Libertarianism, America's favorite political sideshow. While they're often looked at as just a fringe group of political whack jobs who think that the road to Stalinism is paved with driver's licenses, the truth is their ideology is much more influential and dangerous than you probably realize. Because libertarianism isn't so much a political philosophy as it is a religious ideology where the Lord and Savior is pure, unadulterated capitalism. Invisible hand of the free market, take the wheel. American libertarianism is the idea that government is evil and needs to be dismantled. Libertarians don't see society as a collective. They instead champion radical individualism. They see the free market as a force for absolute good and government as solely a corrupting force. One of the primary ways they express these beliefs is by shrieking about taxes constantly.
Taxation is theft.
Taxation is theft.
Taxation, quite frankly, is theft or armed robbery or extortion.
Yup, taxes are just like robbery, except instead of taking your television away, they take your trash away, which is nice. It's nice. Sure, paying taxes doesn't feel good, but once you factor in all the bridges and schools and firefighters and roads and whatnot, it does seem like kind of a fair trade. But don't you dare mention roads to libertarians.
Ah, the old who will build the roads. Roads, roads, roads. Where we're going, we don't need roads.
No, seriously, we need roads. Libertarians have an almost cult-like adherence to the idea that government is bad and the free market is God. I mean good. I mean God.
The free market can solve the problems of the environment.
When it comes to healthcare, what we need is a real free market approach to healthcare.
The Thanksgiving feast came because they had private property rights and they had free markets, and that's how we will take care of the poor.
And lo, the burning bush said unto Moses, "Don't worry about paying taxes, my dude, for the invisible hand of the free market will take care of everything." And yea, the bush soon became a forest fire and burned down Moses' village because there were no taxes and thus no firefighters. So what would a completely free market approach to healthcare look like, according to Gary Johnson, who was ultimately selected as the Libertarian nominee for president?
We would have health insurance to cover ourselves for catastrophic injury and illness, and we would pay as you go in a system that was very, very affordable. We would have stitches are us. We would have gallbladders are us. We would have x-rays are us.
Gallbladders are us? Hey, are you tired of those leaky gallbladders that you have to swap out every 6 months like a common windshield wiper? At Gallbladders R Us, we guarantee a leak-free bladder for only $19.99. That's right, I said $19.99. I must be crazy. People are like, wow, I didn't even know gallbladders could be that cheap. But they can be because they're made out of plastic. We also got dogs. Okay, but what about poor people or old people who can't afford organs from Gallbladders R Us? Like, how would libertarians help them?
How many people in here, and I actually do want a show of hands, love grandmas? How many of you would donate money to feed grandmas? I do not see a single person that did not raise their hand. That's how you fund Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare.
And as for grandpas, fuck them. There's a kind of charming faith-based optimism when it comes to the way that libertarians view private enterprise and human nature. Scary and delusional, but charming. Just listen to libertarian candidate John McAfee's reasoning when explaining why we don't need government-funded social programs because we can rely on each other.
None of us are going to pass a child drowning in a river, even if we're dressed in a tuxedo heading to our wedding. Libertarianism is not heartlessness. It's the opening of the heart to your neighbor.
Aw, speaking of neighbors, true story, John McAfee was wanted by police in Belize in connection to the murder of his neighbor, so. He's sweet. The idea that we don't need laws because people will do the right thing anyway, or that we don't need taxes because people will fund important things anyway, or the idea that we don't need regulations because companies will be ethical anyway, none of that is born out of any statistics, historical precedent, or any other evidence of any kind. It's the same kind of faith-based thinking as Santa is real, or Ted Cruz is human, and not just someone wearing a Batboy mask that got melted in a microwave. While libertarians might be anti-driver's license, anti-Medicare, and anti-public roads, the flip side of being so rigidly anti-government is that they also end up being anti-NSA, anti-interventionist, and anti-drug laws, which appeals to people on the other side of the political spectrum. In fact, the common elevator pitch for libertarianism is that while fiscally conservative, they're also socially liberal.
I believe in a world where gay married couples can protect their marijuana fields with fully automatic machine guns, baby. Oh, yeah.
Yay! Wait, hold on, why do we need machine guns if weed is legal? Oh, it's the world's more dangerous? Libertarian world's more dangerous. It's more dangerous. But the socially liberal side of libertarianism is less about a belief in civil rights being law and more that civil rights are less important than property rights. Listen to libertarian darling Senator Rand Paul explain his thoughts on the 1964 Civil Rights Act.
I like the Civil Rights Act in the sense that it ended discrimination in all public domains, and I'm all in favor of that.
But?
You had to ask me the but. I don't like the idea of telling private business owners. I abhor racism. I think it's a bad business decision to ever exclude anybody from your restaurant. But at the same time, I do believe in private ownership.
Wow, I abhor racism, but. That should definitely be the new libertarian slogan. Libertarianism. I abhor racism. But... And this isn't just Rand Paul. Libertarians often deflect on questions of civil rights.
Mr. McAfee, would you have voted in favor of the 1964 Civil Rights Act had you been in the Senate?
As many of you know, my wife is black. And having spent 3.5 years living 24 hours a day with her, I can assure you that legislation in no way ended discrimination.
Certainly not in my home. I have my own whites-only bathroom. She's not allowed! So it's clear that libertarianism represents the furthest right-wing fringe of economic conservatism. They're basically like the Stalinists of the right. They're like that tanky Facebook friend you have that keeps sending you those Mao Zedong memes. The only difference is that unlike your one lonely tanky friend, there are literally millions of libertarians. In fact, 1 out of 10 Americans identifies as a libertarian. Think about that. If 1 out of 10 Americans describe themselves as believers of the Juche religion of North Korea, the United States would declare a state of emergency. But no, these people are fine because they don't worship Kim Jong-un, they worship Kim Jong-un. Rand. Kim Jong-un, Rand. They worship...
Okay, that gives you an idea. I have a few thoughts on it I'd like to share. First of all, thank you, Dougie Doug. He says, too much payola to legalize marijuana or any other drug. Legalization would bring revenue to government stores, and legalization would mean no more street dealers trying to addict new customers. Those are all legitimate, I would agree. Now, here is the problem with all of these isms, capitalism, Marxism, socialism, and even something as semi-legitimate and semi-illegitimate as libertarianism. Just go through how easy it is to debunk them. For example, show me the hands of grandmothers that you love your grandmother. Would you support your grandmother? Okay, good. I'm glad you would. Now, what about all the people who they're grandmothers, but no one to support them? They wouldn't be supported. And what about your neighbor? Good neighbors. That's it. Good neighbors. Uh-huh. Well, unless I'm missing something, when I was driving around the United States for almost 7 years on and off doing my film Poverty, Inc., I would come to a community where upwards of 40% of the homes were vacant because they had been foreclosed on. When I would ask people, how long did you know your neighbor next door across the street? Oh, 10, 15, 20, 25 years. And did you know they were having financial problems? Yeah, you know, you kind of know that. And did you do anything to help them? Did you say, friend, you know, our neighbors, can we help you in some way? Nope. Did anyone help anyone in some way? Nope. Did the government help them? Did your family help them? Well, couch surfing, yeah, that's where most people ended up, in someone's basement, attic, garage reconverted to have someone be able to, at least for a period of time, stay there. But neighbors didn't. So you think the churches should be the ones that we go to for Social Security and Medicaid and food stamps? That doesn't work, because right now, with all the members of churches and with all the churches, we shouldn't have any homeless problems in any city in America. We shouldn't have any hungry people, but we do. So that doesn't work either, though there are some churches and there are some places that do help, but it's not universal and it's not the majority. So what we have is we have this idea that the free market, but the free market's exactly what's caused our problems. The free market caused income inequality. The free market allowed people to monopolize industries. All of the media, six industries, 90% of all the media, that's a monopoly. Look at the internet. Four carriers represent 90% of all the internet. That's monopoly. Look at your telephone service, monopoly. And Con Ed, a monopoly. So then we don't really benefit from the free market when it comes to creating a stable, prosperous, for everyone society. The free market is against unions. The free market is against raising the minimum wage. The free market doesn't pay its fair share of taxes because it has all the exemptions that allow it to get out even before this tax write-off giveaway. And looking back, that didn't help the average person. Also, they talk about, well, we'll have a special app for your gallbladder. No, because it means that we're for the free market and profiteering in medicine and healthcare. A person with a rattlesnake bite in California was alive, got one medication. They charged him $80,000 for that medication. They charged him $20,000 just to test his blood in a lab in the hospital. None of that was necessary. They could have charged him $2,000 for the same way of getting him back to health, but they knew they could gouge it, and he didn't have insurance. That will bankrupt him. So the market, the free market, is what's caused the most bankruptcies in American history because we didn't have universal health care. You don't want to have people have to pay for a fire department. Then what happens when you have a fire? If you don't have the insurance, they can't come and pick out the fire. What about our police department? What about these civil defense measures? What about our Coast Guard? What about our public schools? You don't want public schools because you don't want to pay for them? You don't want licenses? What about airline pilots? What about subway conductors? You don't want where we need a license? Now, we can over-license, yes, and the government has become too big in some areas and has become an enemy of the people, the CIA, Homeland Security, ICE, the State Department, the Justice Department. These do not represent the best interest in the future of America. The Supreme Court recently ruled that the police do not have to serve the public. We've militarized the police. So when you look at libertarianism, pull back far enough to see where we're at today and how did we get here? How did we get to where an environment where no industries, Coke industries, that's free market, they're not cleaning up the mess. And what about all the other industries, coal, nuclear, gas, hydrofracking, causing massive environmental pollutants that are causing the excessive storms? More rain fell on Houston area of Texas than any time in American history, 21 trillion gallons of water. That was from global warming. That was in part from industrial farming and our new type of industrialization. So what you preach, if you examine it, makes no sense. So unfortunately, you get a group of people together and they start praying to Ayn Rand, you're in trouble. And by the way, I knew Ayn Rand. Ironic that she didn't believe in any public support, yet she went on Social Security and when she was sick. Yep, that's how it works in the end. A lot of hypocrisy. And yet I do believe that our government is out of control. I believe it's fascistic. I believe that it in many areas of government, not all, should be completely redone. And redundancy, and also the idea that we would give the Pentagon 56 cents out of every dollar, but we don't have money for schools. We don't have money to clean up the failing water supply in the United States. We don't have money to help relocate people that need to. We don't have money to ghettoize cities and help the average person get up on their feet. But we have unlimited money to put into the military-industrial complex? Yeah, that's wrong. So there's a lot more complication to understanding these issues than branding oneself a libertarian and think somehow you've reached the promised land. You haven't. Continue your journey. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.